The views and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of the station, its staff, management, or ownership.
Good morning. You're Finding Out with Pete Dillon. I'm Peter Leonard.
And I'm Ellen DeVorsett.
And we're on the air this morning with Dr. Susie Buttons from Aster, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
One of the topics that you deal with regularly is suicide prevention. Is that right?
Yes, it is. At Aster Services in Dutchess County, we serve about 4,000 children a year with emotional disturbance or special educational needs, and we do treat children who have suicidal thinking and suicidal behavior.
Yeah, it's just such a stunning sentence. We treat kids who have suicidal tendencies or behaviors. That's because I think our general notion of suicide is the depressed 45-year-old, and yet your kids can be depressed also.
Well, you'd be surprised, Peter, that suicidal thinking and suicidal planning in children is far more common than we think. The CDC has found, for example, that about 14% of youth between 9th and 12th grade have thought about suicide, and about 11% of youth in 9th to 12th grade have made a specific plan for suicide.
Wow. Okay, I'm surprised at that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess we don't have a hard time relating to the notion of, boy, they're going to miss me when I'm gone, syndrome. But that's sort of the toe in the water of actually thinking or planning your own demise, right?
Well, it's interesting. With children, particularly teenagers, they can be very impulsive. So that sort of a thought, they're going to miss me when I'm gone, can actually, in the absence of adult intervention, lead to some dangerous, risky behavior and can also lead to the risk of actually completing suicide. So those are statements and thoughts that parents and teachers and caregivers want to take very seriously when they hear a child speaking like that.
Yeah, and I guess especially in any group of kids who have issues you can point to. I mean, in other words, anybody is susceptible to impulsive thoughts or depression or whatnot. But some people, it's predictable. If you have a real problematic social situation, it starts to make more sense, or if not make more sense, becomes more likely to think about.
Exactly. Yeah. There are several groups of children who are at increased risk for suicide. Those groups include children who have some sort of diagnosed behavioral disturbance, kids who have depression, kids who have anxiety, kids who are oppositional and or aggressive, and also youth who are using or abusing substances, they're at increased risk for suicide. In addition to that, kids who are being bullied, kids who are experiencing extremely serious peer conflict, kids who are reacting strongly to the experience or the perceived experience of being humiliated in some way, say their girlfriend or boyfriend broke up with them or someone embarrassed them in a public situation. And also youth whose families are in some sort of difficult situation or in some sort of conflict. Families where there's a really high conflict divorce going on. Families who are struggling with job loss and multiple moves. These are all kids who are at increased risk for suicidal thinking and behavior.
Well, when you put it that way, it becomes a very familiar territory. Everybody would have fit into one of those categories somewhere along the line.
Yes.
And my initial reaction of, boy, it's such an odd sentence to talk about kids' suicide. But as you discuss it, you can see how prevalent it is and how we can relate to it in an imaginative way.
Yeah, and it's also important to know that suicide is currently the fourth leading cause of death for adolescents and the third leading cause of death for youth who are a little bit younger than that. More than 5,000 teenagers a year commit suicide in our country. And when you think about the fact that on average, a youth suiciding, in addition to just that tremendous loss of the potential life and the wonderful young being, also impacts about 9 other people tragically, and that suicidal behavior can be somewhat contagious, that makes you want to take it all the more seriously and really look at risk factors, warning signs, and how to prevent these kinds of things.
So 5,000 teen suicides, that's basically twice the number of people who were killed in the World Trade Center during the attack in 2001.
Exactly.
And we're still, as a nation, we're still aching over that.
Yeah.
And when you think of the personal, very personal tragedy of, you know, I guess you use the number of 9 people on average are really affected by each suicide.
Mm-hmm.
That winds up being 45,000 people, 45,000 Americans who are aching. And, you know, if you're having 2 World Trade Center tragedies a year and it doesn't have the advantage of being publicly mourned or even mentioned, because, I mean, there's also a stigma attached to suicide. Is that right?
Exactly. There's a stigma really in our country still, unfortunately, attached to mental health needs in general. And at Aster, we serve many families and children who are really struggling with not only the emotional issues, but the stigma associated with those emotional issues. And so one of the most important preventive measures we can take, in addition to making sure we have high quality, high, easy access mental health services for kids, is to really start talking about these issues more with our kids, teachers, parents, in our communities, really begin to put this out there that children think about this sometimes. As a matter of fact, they're thinking about it more frequently, some statistics show. So we really want to take that stigma away and talk about it more publicly.
Yeah, and I think there's what goes beyond behind any stigma is the notion that, well, it's better not to talk about it. You know, sort of an old-fashioned notion, if you don't talk about it, everyone will forget it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend not to forget. It's impossible to forget your own pain, and we know it's a relief and it's therapeutically positive to actually talk about it. And when you're silenced, it makes the pain greater and the eventual suicide more likely, is that?
It does. And what's interesting is that many people, when we talk with them about this issue, parents, for example, that we serve at Aster, will say, I was afraid to ask my child, or I'm afraid to ask my child, are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about hurting yourself? Many people think if they mention it, it'll put the thought into a child's head or a person's head. That's actually not true. It's much more likely that a child, and even an adult for that matter, will refrain from suicide once someone asks them, is this something you're thinking about doing? You can do more harm by silencing yourself than you can by asking specifically and talking specifically
about it. It's a very hard lesson for us to learn culturally as well as individually.
Yes.
You know, I guess part of the fear is if you ask your kid, you know, did you do your homework? And the answer is no, you have a, you know, like, what are you going to do? And if you ask your child, are you contemplating hurting yourself or committing suicide? If the answer to that is puts a responsibility on you that you might not be able to handle. So a lot of it is self-protective. The whole notion of a stigma that we try to justify in terms of our sympathy towards other people is, you know, I think almost always a very self-protective thing. We don't know what to do.
Right. And it's important for parents to be educated on what to do. And we can talk about that a little bit. If you see warning signs in your teenager, things like changes in behavior, irritability, depression, withdrawal from family life or peer life, giving away possessions, poetry or songwriting that's preoccupied with death, statements like, I think I shouldn't be around anymore, nobody will miss me when I'm gone, as you said at the beginning of the show, then you really should intervene. You should ask your child, are you feeling depressed? Are you feeling suicidal? If the answer is yes, the most important means of preventing suicide is something we call means prevention. And that means keeping your child from being able to access the tools to suicide. One of the most common, very practical. So access to guns needs to be completely restricted. Access to weapons, access to over-the-counter medication that's potentially lethal, Tylenol being one of the most potentially lethal over-the-counter medications, and access to prescription medication. Also, if a child is acutely suicidal and depressed, taking things away like ropes, making sure there's no access to those sorts of things. Second, and also equally important, is very quick access to assessment and treatment if needed. Aster Services, for example, has open access intakes at all of our outpatient clinics in Dutchess County on weekdays from 10 to 2. That means if you're worried about your child, you can walk into one of our outpatient clinics and ask to be seen by a mental health professional during
now,
those hours.
Does the child need to be with you? Because I'm thinking that the child may refuse to go, especially if it's a young adult.
If it's a young adult and the child refuses to go and you feel your child is at risk, the best thing to do is to call 911.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's also a new thing. I mean, to have instant access to a mental health professional is new. I mean, mostly in our country, we don't have access to medical care without calling the doctor, making an appointment. I mean, it's a hassle. And but besides the hassle, there are medical issues. Some can't wait. You have emergency rooms for that.
Right.
But to have an emergency room for mental health issues is what this amounts to, is very, very important. And it also, I think in order to even use the word access that, access seems like a professional word. In order to go to Aster's open mental health clinic, you have to sort of take the stigma out of it. I mean, in your own mind, I don't know how to access mental health. What do you mean? You go to the doctor because the kid's in trouble.
Yeah, access sounds like it's a whole big procedure, and it's as simple as making the phone call.
And you don't even have to make the phone
call. Just walk
in. Right. The agency's mission really is to make people realize that emotional struggles and stressors are not to be stigmatized. They're not to be judged. Families are to be helped and supported. Kids are to be helped and supported. You can just walk in between the hours of 10 and 2, and you'll be connected with someone who can help you, talk to your child, listen to you and your child, and provide you with resources.
Right. Now, if you need to call 911, is it true that once the child is taken, he or she needs to stay in a secure facility like the psychiatric ward for 72 hours, or is that a myth?
That's a myth. What we know about suicidal behavior is that it needs to be promptly assessed.
Uh-huh.
So what will happen is that the child will be taken to an emergency room where they will be assessed by a psychiatric professional.
Right.
But it's not true that they have to be kept for 72 hours in every single case.
Okay.
Children will only be kept in a restricted setting if they need to be safe.
Okay, so if it's really, really obvious that the suicide attempt is imminent, they remain hospitalized for a while. But if not, the psychiatric evaluator gives more sources of where to go and what to do.
Exactly. Referrals, likely to a place like Aster for treatment or support services. Aster also provides a lot of in-home services to families.
Mm-hmm.
And so those sorts of referrals can be resulting from an ER visit.
Now, are there any statistics as to how many parents ask the question and get, no, I'm fine? Or who actually say, yes, I am depressed, I am in trouble?
We don't have statistics on how many parents ask. What we have is statistics on what youth say prevents them from suiciding when they felt like it, and what we know about youth who've completed suicide.
Okay.
And what we know about those who say, I thought about it, is that some important person asked and intervened, right?
Okay, great.
Really, when we think about preventing suicide, it's all about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Caring teachers, attentive, present parents, caring mental health professionals, and peers who don't keep the suicidal thinking secret, but go seek help from an expert adult.
Now, what about those who do successfully commit suicide? What kind of responses do they get when the question is asked, or don't we know?
What we know is that those kids often were isolated in some way.
Oh, okay.
And that we sometimes hear parents say, I thought something was wrong, but I didn't ask.
Okay.
Or I didn't know anything was wrong. But then when you sort of look at the case, you find some of the most common risk factors might have been present. Easy access to guns or weapons or over-the-counter medication. An absence of intervention from the caring adults and peers around the child.
So if your child is acting differently than normal, you just remove those things in an attempt to save the child and ask the question.
Exactly. Okay. Both are very important.
Okay.
So you're finding out with Pete and Ellen, and I'm Pete Leonard.
And I'm Ellen DeVorsetz.
And we're on the air with Dr. Susie Buttons, who's a mental health professional with Aster Services. And I think one of the simplest things is even hearing you talk, I mean, I think people are who might be nervous about going with such a big problem to a system, they can be assured that you show up at ASTA and you're going to have a nice person with a lot of capabilities greet you and want to be in the issue with you. Is that
exactly right? Yeah. As an agency, and I can say this for our individual staff, we're here to support families, walk down the road with families, help them find the resources, help them find hope and healing. We're not here to make you feel judged or put off. Yeah. And so we really encourage you to contact the agency if you're worried about your child.
It's such a big deal to feel you have, you know, in a simple term, you know, a nice person at the other end. I mean, you want a nice person who has specific skills, but the non-nice person with the specific skills, you're not going to do so well with them.
Exactly.
You know? And but it's such a huge problem. I mean, in terms of you know, what could happen if a young person commits suicide. And we were talking about teen suicide up to now, but you also brush by real childhood suicide. At about what age is somebody capable of thinking about it? Because it's a very there's no other animal on earth that commits suicide. Right? I mean, that we know. So it's a very specifically human thing, and at what point that becomes a cognitive possibility is
well, I'm going to get jargony for a minute, but the onset.
I just said cognitive.
Well, you did, and I'm going to say the same word. The onset of what we call metacognition, which is the ability to think about one's thinking, happens around age 9, 10, 11 with kids. And so that's when the tendency to think about how unhappy one is and begin to be more unhappy about one's thinking and willing to act on one's unhappiness can be at a higher prevalence. But younger children, 7, 8, 9, 10, who are really struggling with some emotional unhappiness can hurt themselves in more impulsive ways. And certainly, although it's more likely that suicide would happen with an older child, younger children who are exhibiting self-injuring behaviors, extreme, angry, oppositional, and impulsive behaviors, or who are some young children will voice suicidal ideation, they should certainly be seen and screened by a pediatrician, a mental health professional right away.
And what about young people, young kids I'm talking about, who have, they injure themselves. Like, I think we hear a lot about, especially young girls cutting themselves. Is that a prelude to something more serious, or is that a specific thing that sort of stays to itself?
Well, again, I want to emphasize that any youth who's cutting themselves should be assessed by a mental health professional. But often, cutting and self-injury is seen as a distinct set of issues from suicidal behavior. Self-injury can be a very, very disturbing way of coping with strong emotions. In any event, if you see your child is cutting or self-injuring, burning themselves in any way, they too should be seen by a mental health professional because they need to learn better coping skills for their emotions.
No matter what the age.
No matter what the age.
But it's not a thing where there's necessarily a well-worn pattern between the student or the young person who is cutting themselves, graduates to doing other behaviors and then commit suicide.
It's less clear than that. What we do know is that youth who have attempted suicide, so that means a child who's cut themselves and said, I cut myself so that I can die, is more likely to try suicide again and complete suicide. A child who is saying they want to die or they wish they weren't around anymore is more likely to try suicide. Children who are cutting themselves and hurting themselves, that's not necessarily the case. But again, I would encourage anyone who's facing that difficulty in their family to seek some professional help because it's important to get that assessment and find out what's really going on.
That makes sense.
And you have to, you know, fight through, fight is probably the wrong word. You have to confront in some way the stigma that exists not only in society in general, but it exists in us. So even as a parent, you don't want to admit that your kid has those problems, whatever the problem may be.
Right. And one of the ways to help think about that for parents is to think about the fact that these days, stress and pressure on our youth are higher than ever before. There is more competition to get better grades, to look prettier, to be thinner, to be more athletic, to get into better schools. And that kind of stress and pressure is really not about shame or embarrassment. It's about what's happening in our culture. And so for parents to find their support for their children is not an embarrassing thing to do. It's really being a very effective, helpful parent.
It's also amazing the adults believe all those things about, like, you know, that the, there's such thing as good schools. I mean,
right.
All that, you know, I mean, the good school is the school you do your homework at. But all the hierarchy of who's accepted is very, very clear from an early age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
in the wackiest form, you have, in Manhattans of, like, kids getting into kindergarten who have to take tests. And
That's crazy talk.
Yes, mm-hmm. but it's the people involved in it are, nice people who, but when you're not in it, it just seems so off to have little kids compete at that level. But it gives a tip to the pressure they're under that can wind up being a real big problem for some of them.
Go ahead.
Well, it's important to emphasize that the kinds of pressures that kids are under are relieved, again, by relationships.
Right.
And so, really, time and attention to and with your kids cannot be underestimated as a preventive measure. School communities that are caring, teacher-student relationships are a tremendously strong predictor of successful kids, high achievers, and good mental health in a school, right? And in communities, programs that let kids connect to caring adults and stable peers are really, really important. And so nowadays, when we're talking about a lot of budget cuts, those kinds of resources for kids in these high-pressure times are very, very important.
Now, that makes my question all the more pertinent than if I had asked it before you said that. I hope it's pertinent.
Ellen's the only person who will brag about her question before she asks
it. Well, hopefully it makes sense.
We're all waiting for it.
What's the history on a child who may act depressed and self-injuring at home, but acts perfectly normal and fine in a school environment? Or is that the case sometimes, or is it usually all-encompassing action?
You know, it can be any combination, Ellen. It can be a child who does very well at school and is letting off that emotional pressure and showing that stress at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be kids that are very buttoned up at home because the home environment is not open to that kind of expression and can be falling apart in school. And then we have kids who are really struggling in both environments.
Okay. So no matter who you are, a teacher, a counselor, a parent, a grandparent, if you see the behavior, take action. Is that correct?
Ask your kid about it. Ask your student about it. Ask your friend about it. Reassure them that you care about them, love them. Remind them that no matter how bad they feel, they can work through their problems and help connect them to resources to work through their problems.
So in one sense, what I'm seeing here is very often adults, we feel very much not useful sometimes. And what you're saying is adults are very useful. If you're around a kid, if you're a neighbor who takes an interest in kids, if you're a coach, a teacher, anybody. So it's not only the kids that are important. Adults are important if they make themselves important by doing the right thing by a kid.
Exactly. And that notion of tribe and reaching out to support services and resources for kids can't be underestimated in its importance. Really, you can make a difference in the life of a child.
Is there a phone number or that we should be aware of, or any practical messages?
Well, there are several things I'd like to make sure people have. There's a 24/7 National Suicide Prevention Hotline, and that number is 1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K. You can also call the Dutchess County Helpline. That number is 845-485-9700.
And that's in the Dutchess County phone book, I think.
That's in the Dutchess County phone book. Remember, you can walk into any Astor outpatient clinic in Dutchess County between the hours of 10 and 2, Monday through Friday, and be guaranteed access to a mental health professional. And also, if you want more information on suicide prevention, you can look on the World Wide Web. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is an excellent resource for folks.
Now, is there one number at Astor to call to find out the addresses of the walk-in centers?
Well, you have easy access to all of that information at our website, which is www.astorservices.org.
Okay.
So askservices.org is the best way to get the information. And I guess what I'd want to emphasize, and I didn't come into the studio thinking this morning, was just how plausible it is that you could have a student or a young person who is in severe circumstances, and that there's And if you find yourself in that position, there's no reason to think that you would know specifically what to do. But there are good people who are willing and capable of helping that are available. You know, and one way to do that is through the ASTAServices.org website. But you know, this is a very eye-opening thing, and I guess I can take my own dopey statement in the beginning saying, what an odd thing, kid suicide. That does make sense. Unfortunately, we're finding out that it does make sense, that we should be alert to that. And so I really appreciate Dr. Susie Buttons for finding out with Pete Nellen.